What's up, everybody? I go by the name of Doggy Diamonds. You are now listening to No Filter Podcast. No filter means honesty. If you're afraid of honesty, then this ain't the podcast for you. We gonna be honest today. What it is, people, it's your boy Doggy Diamonds. Another episode of Doggy Diamonds No Filter. We're going to make this a quick one today. So much shit going on in the world. So we're going to do this really, really quick. Just get all the information to y'all as fast as possible. You know I don't introduce everybody. But today I'm going to introduce my guest to my right. If you're looking, it should be to your left. Freeway. Ricky Ross. What's going on, bro?
I'm well. How you?
Chilling, man. I had to remind him who I was because he was like, I don't remember you. We did an interview a long time ago, but you know, that was like 117 pounds ago. So he's like, damn, I didn't know you lost that much weight.
In 8 years.
Yeah.
You told me it was 8 years ago. So, you know, a lot of stuff to change for me in 8 years. Man, I just got out of jail then. I'd only been out of jail like a year.
You
did that, so.
So.
My life is in a total different place now.
Yeah. You off parole?
I'm off parole.
You wasn't off parole then?
No. So I was walking on eggshells and during that time. I'm not for sure, but I'm almost positive that my PO was trying to violate me at that time.
You told me they was because they didn't want you to speak to the children.
That or more so come in contact with felons.
Yeah.
It's what they were trying to violate me for. I was in Philly and I took a picture with one of my friends that I was in jail with, Jimmy the Saint, who I wrote a book with, Black Scarface.
Wow.
And me and him took a picture when I came to Philly to speak, and he wanted me to take a picture holding the book that me and him wrote together, and he posted the picture on his Facebook page. He actually went back to prison.
For that?
Yeah, for that.
And for taking a picture with you?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, but my judge, she wouldn't send me back to prison, but my PO asked her to send me back to prison. So I lucked up and didn't have to go.
Because y'all was doing something positive together.
Well, they don't care what it is.
Yeah, that's disgusting.
That you're doing, you know. The law basically says that if you're on parole, you can't come in contact with a felon. You're not supposed to come in contact with a felon.
No reason. No circumstances.
No circumstances.
So when I introduce you, I introduce you as Freeway Ricky Ross. Is that the best way for people to introduce you?
I mean, that's cool. I mean, with me, I don't care what you call me. Just call me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, I'm under the consumption is that if people call you, they want to use you. And I want to be used, you know, because I understand that if you don't use me, then I have no value.
Then you're useless.
I'm useless.
Reason why I asked you that, because I know you don't want to get it. I know you don't want people to get it twisted when we say, yo, what's up? That's Rick Ross. And then people be like,
oh, no, I am Rick Ross.
No, but this.
No question.
Let's not get it twisted. This is Rick Ross. But I know plenty of times it might have been a situation where people say that's Rick Ross. And
all the time.
The rapper. And you like.
When I go to schools and I mean, I've had kids come up to me and say, why did you change your name to Rick Ross? And I already know what they're thinking. You know, like, why did you take the rapper's name?
Yeah.
And then once I explained to him that my mom named me Rick Ross, that Rick Ross is on my birth certificate, and I'm perfectly comfortable with being Rick Ross. You know, don't get it twisted. You know, I made the name Rick Ross famous before he ever thought about being famous. I was in the newspapers, I was on TV. Before he probably was even rapping.
They need to ask him, why did you take the name Rick Ross?
Exactly. Yeah. That's the question. So, you can call me Rick Ross, Freeway Rick, Late Rick. It don't matter. Highway Rick. I'm going to answer.
You're going to answer the question.
When I got to Texas, you know, guys were calling me Highway Rick.
Yeah.
You know, and that was because they didn't understand that in California, it's freeways.
Got you. So it was going based off the area. They was like,
Yeah. It wasn't out of disrespect or nothing like that. And I don't take it as disrespectful. I take it as a lack of understanding or a lack of knowledge. So, you know, just call me.
You being well-respected as far as, you know, you've been in the game since the 80s. Many of these children wasn't even born when you was out in the game.
Yeah, I see some of their mothers and fathers wasn't even born.
You had hair, you had a little twist and all that at one point that long ago.
Yeah, I had the natural, you know, back.
Yeah.
I remember when the naturals came out, the Black Power.
When he say natural, that means natural, like you know, the afro.
No chemicals.
Yeah, no chemicals, nothing.
Yeah, a pitchfork. You know, we used to have big old pitchforks, you know. It was a good time, though.
And I know, I'm pretty sure you're connected with a lot of street dudes and the street element. Was it ever a time where you had to really call off the hogs from really, really trying to go at this guy for taking your likeness?
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, I grew up in L.A. and L.A. is gang dominated, you know, and I have a lot of nephews and a lot of cousins. My mom had 24 brothers and sisters.
Whoa.
So our family is enormous, and I got a lot of young cousins and nephews, and they didn't appreciate him using the name. And,
gotcha.
And some of them are shot callers in their neighborhoods, you know, and they wanted to do something about it. And especially one time, I think he went on the Breakfast Club, and he called me an informant, a snitch or something, where they felt insulted. And they felt that not only did he insult me, but he also insulted them.
The Ross family.
Exactly.
The real Ross family, yeah.
He insulted the whole generation. And I had to explain to them that somebody who has no credibility can't insult you.
Can't discredit you. Yeah.
You know, because he has no credibility. You know, anybody with any inkling about jail, the streets, would know, you know, and that's why I kind of discredit the Breakfast Club as well, because they didn't really do an interview. They pretty much was doing, what would you call it, a promotional situation where they were making him look big and not really doing an interview because, you know, I mean, if I did an interview with him and he called somebody a snitch, the first thing I would say, well, who did he
based
tell
off
him?
What? Yeah, based off
who
what?
Did he tell him?
But then you also got to remember that, you know, depending on who's doing the interview, they don't know that because they're not from the streets.
Yeah,
so that's why you, in discrediting them, you do have validity in that, because if somebody say to me, yo, he a snitch, I'm going to say where the paperwork.
Or who was it that he told
him? Who was it? At least say that. But this is what's happening in media right now. A lot of people are being called snitches, informants, rats, but nobody asked them to prove the point.
Right.
And you know, that's one of the worst things you could ever call a man, especially coming from the penal system.
Correct.
Is a snitch. And if you don't have paperwork, you're not allowed to say that.
And with the internet now, you know, wouldn't we have, you know, how easy would it be for one guy who would be willing to make a reputation for himself and say, you know what, he told on me. I'm the guy that he came to court and he told on me, here's the paperwork. Or not even have the paperwork. We don't even say, don't even show the paperwork, but just make the acquisition. You know, come forward and say that I'm the guy
that he told on.
That he told on.
I got one better for you. Why would you take the name of a snitch?
That's
and on that note, we can move on.
Yeah.
Have you been on the Breakfast Club?
I've never been on the Breakfast Club.
Wow. That's interesting.
Well, you know, major media, they don't accept me because I am something that they don't want young black America to be.
I'm confused by that because it's okay for the rapper to not, I'm not talking about that in particular rapper, I'm talking about rappers. It's okay for rappers to emulate what you really lived. And they could go up to major media outlets and talk about what you really live. It's documented. You have been convicted for living the life.
The United States government said it.
Yeah. Listen.
They said it. They did a certified stamped document saying that you are a distributor and you are a possessor of narcotics. You had more than five people working for you. These are your charges.
Wow. Yeah, exactly. So that kind of baffles me. But you know what, though, it's good to have independent platforms, independent media that's always willing
no doubt.
To talk to
you. You guys are playing field levelers.
No, we kick down the gate. Ain't
so,
no gatekeepers.
So without you guys doing what you do, people don't get the real news. As Donald Trump would say, they get the fake news.
cracked in the system. That's the name of it, right?
Cracking the System.
Cracked in the System. I watched it, but I already knew who you were previously to that.
Yeah.
Documentaries, how difficult is it to do a documentary? We talked off camera that it's a lot more than what people see.
Well, you know, I dreamed up that documentary when I was in prison, and when I was in prison, you know, one of the things that really irked me when I had my life sentence is that I had all this knowledge that I had accumulated over not only my 8.5, 9 years of dealing drugs, but prior to that, I had accumulated a lot of knowledge as well. And I was sitting in prison and I had all this information and I was like, how are you going to get this to your people? You know, this is information that they need. You know, they need to know how the system works, how the system can twist you into believing that you're dumb, you're stupid, that you can't compete. And as you know, with the Willie Lynch syndrome, once you convince a person to believe that they're a slave,
they start to act and think like one.
They're going to act and think like one. A book, my last book that I read, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome, and it talks
Joy
about.
Joy DeGruy.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, yeah. We got knowledge of self over here.
And she talked about if you take control of the mind, you no longer have to tell them to go to the back of the bus. They'll go on their own. You don't have to tell them to go to the back door of the restaurant. They'll go on their own. And if there's no back door, they'll create one.
Wow, yeah, that's crazy.
You know, and that's the way that I feel that we as black people in America have been programmed, trained to believe those stereotypes.
Two things I want to get out of this interview before, you know, before we go. What is it like to have beef with the president? Because you basically had beef with the president, the whole United States government, right? Like, yeah. They was like, it was him. Like, you know, because you blew the whistle on, listen, we was down together. We was getting money together. And then they was like, no, it was him. But I said, what is it like to have beef with the president? Who was the president at the time?
It's rough, man.
Ronald Reagan, right?
Well, no, when I actually fell, George Bush was the president, and then Clinton took over. But, you know, when you have beef with one.
Senior or the son?
Senior. When you have beef with one.
You got beef with all the presidents.
The other one take over.
Yeah.
You know, when they had the war with Saddam Hussein, it started with one person, but then another one took it up.
The next regime picks it up, yeah.
Right. You know, like with Gaddafi, the fight started with George Bush, and even though George Bush and Obama didn't really care for each other, Obama took on the war and eventually was on his watch that they eventually killed Gaddafi.
Yep.
So when you're fighting the United States government, you're fighting all of them.
Yeah.
You know? And it's crazy that you asked me that question because during the time that I was writing my book, I was in San Diego in what they call a high rise, the Million Dollar View, which is a federal prison, 18 stories high, mm-hmm. and it overlooks the bay of San Diego where the warships come in, the aircraft carriers, and right where my room was where they parked the aircraft carriers, and I looked out the window because this was during the time that they were invading Iraq.
Oh.
And I would see the ships going in and out, and I knew that they would use those ships and everything in their arsenal to bring you to justice if necessary.
And also bring the drugs in. With them same ships.
The ships that they brought the drugs exactly,
with that
I sold.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they would use those ships to bring me to what they call their justice. So, you know, when you're fighting against the United States government, you're fighting a powerful entity.
Wow. Was it ever a point where you fear for, well, I'm pretty sure you fear for your life? Was it like, because, you know, I see a lot of rappers say, you know, I sell this drug, the feds is on me. What is it like to really have the feds on you?
It's nerve-wracking, man. You know, can you imagine that every day you wake up, you know that this could be the day that they draw guns on you.
You
kick your door in, draw guns on you. Or you. And any time, you know, like I tell people, any time that a cop pulls you over and he puts his hand on his pistol, it's a life or death situation.
It could be it.
You know, you don't know what's on his mind. You know, a lot of times when they see us, they afraid off the rip.
Yeah.
Young black male, dangerous. You know, I mean, for us to be dangerous, you just need a hoodie.
Yeah.
You put a hoodie on.
A bag of Skittles and Arizona iced tea.
Yeah, you dangerous then, you know.
Good Goodfellas. when he looked up and he see the helicopters, and was that your life?
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine, you know, and one reason why I'm asking you this, because I think the young dudes that's up and coming and they think they get their little money and they want to brag about being drug dealers, it's not cool when they after you, when they on you.
Oh,
they
no, gonna get no, you. No, no, no. What's the conviction rate
of the feds?
Like 98%. You know, if they arrest you, they got you.
They got you.
You know, like I'm looking at right now, the guys who going through it with Donald Trump's guys, mm-hmm. Manafort and so forth, they got them.
Yeah.
You know, when the feds indict you, more than likely you're done. You know, they're going to find you guilty. It's very few people. I got lucky. You know, I went to trial. I lost in trial. But I found a technical issue that got me back. You know, but I still did 20 years. You know, it wasn't like I walked out unscathed.
That's a lot of these young kids' life.
And I felt 20 years was a bargain. You know, I was happy to get 20 years.
Damn. Did you ever meet Pablo Escobar?
No, I didn't meet Pablo.
Yeah, because, you know, we just think, oh, shit, he was selling drugs. He knew Pablo. He knew all the cartels. But you knew some of the cartels.
No, I knew guys that dealt with them.
Okay.
But even though I got big, I still was a simple dude who was still confined to his neighborhood. You know, I had opportunities to go overseas, go to Mexico and make moves. But I was more comfortable in the hood, you know. No, I just keep bringing it to the hood to me.
I don't care
what your price is, you know, what the price is going to mm-hmm. be in Mexico or Colombia. I ain't interested in that.
Oh, so if you had to travel to Mexico, you would have got it for the low.
I could have got it for the low, yeah. low. But I was more comfortable with you know, staying in the hood and being in my comfort zone, you know, around the homies.
I asked everybody who hustled before, and I want to know their perspective. What did crack do to black people?
Oh, wow. Crack really was a setback to us. You know, when it started off, it looked like it was going to be a boost for us, but it became a crutch in more ways than one.
A crippling crutch, though, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. For the young black entrepreneurs, we thought that it was going to be a boost, you know, for us, a rocket fuel, you know, that would shoot us into the atmosphere. We all went to prison or got killed. For the users who thought it was a boost for them to keep them up and partying and making better music and so forth, eventually it broke them down to where they no longer wanted to do their jobs. They wanted to become crack dealers as well. So in actuality, it displaced a lot of people. Right now, LA's homeless rate with the black community is skyrocketing, and the communities that we used to own are now being gentrified. So it devastated us. But at the same time, you know, something my mama used to say, anything that don't kill you will fatten you. So if we take the lessons that we learned from the crack era and put some fat on our brains, then it could have been a benefit. You know, my man said, you give me lemons, I'm going to make lemonade.
Do you think black people have a lawsuit that they could take against the government for the manufacturing and crack being put in our community?
I don't think we could win that.
But is it...
I mean, it should be. It should be, but...
they would have to admit it, right?
Is that the way to go right now? I don't think so. I mean, they haven't even apologized to us for slavery.
You're right.
So you going to ask them to give us some money?
But see, lawsuit to me is not always monetary. To me, it's just the admittance that we deliberately fucked y'all around.
Well, they already admitted that.
Well, yeah, the Nixon...
The CIA did a report. And basically what they said is that we didn't sanction the sale of cocaine into America, but we knew that our operatives were selling cocaine. And if you go with the aiding and abetting law, which nobody's going to try to convict none of these guys. I'm not saying that that's going to happen.
Yeah, you know.
Oliver North is... He's the president of the NRA.
Oliver. I forgot about good old Ollie North.
They're not finna bother Oliver. you know. And if they did, Trump would probably give him a pardon.
Crazy.
But what I'm saying is that these people are not going to go back and chastise none of their people. And for us, what we have to do is we have to take our lessons and build on those lessons so that at least that never happens to us again.
What do you got going on in 2018?
Oh, my goodness.
Man. Yeah, he got a million and one things.
You know, we just got financed for the movie.
Okay.
So the movie's in progress. Just partnered up with my man that used to own American Apparel, Dove. So the clothing line's finna be crazy. I'm finna be giving out clothing line deals to artists.
We just talked up. Well, we.
I got that going. I'm in the cannabis industry. You know, okay. I'm pushing the social equity in LA right now because I feel that more blacks should be allowed to participate in the cannabis industry. Right now, it's a white industry. And I feel that blacks should have equity, especially in our neighborhoods. You know, they're getting ready.
Especially the biggest consumers of something.
Yeah, they're getting ready to bring dispensaries to our. Well, they already got dispensaries in our neighborhood. And there was only three blacks that had licenses in the whole Los Angeles.
Wow.
So I thought that those numbers are ridiculous and that they should make more opportunity for blacks. Matter of fact, I'll be speaking in front of LA City Council tomorrow about why social equity is so important to the industry as a whole, because I don't believe that the industry is going to function without allowing us to participate in not only the consumption, but also in the business aspect.
Yeah.
You know, let us make some money off of it. You know, don't just hire whites in the industry, because it's not a white industry. A white-only industry, let me say that.
You also, we talked about they don't know the podcast thing that's coming.
Yeah, I'm working on my own podcast.
Yeah.
As you already know, my book is still out. I'm still pushing the Real Rick Ross autobiography, The Untold Story. You can get that also at my website, freewayrickross.com. You know, I'm still pushing my t-shirt line.
Okay.
I got hats coming out.
He didn't bring me no shirt.
Oh, man. Well, you know, I was out here on a meeting. I wasn't out here to push the book or the t-shirt.
What's the name of the book?
Freeway Rick Ross, Untold Autobiography.
And could they get that on the website? Could they get that at Barnes & Noble and all that also?
They can get it on all those.
Did you do an audiobook?
I haven't did the audiobook yet.
Because, you know, these people nowadays don't want to read.
Y'all got
to
read.
You still got to read.
It's going to stick to you when you read.
But remember what we said earlier off camera. If they want a certain type of product, you got to give them that too. So
I'm gonna hold you to something you taught me. No doubt.
So you got to give them the audio book.
I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna do more than that. I'm finna give it to them on film.
Oh yeah, that's
you know what I'm saying.
Who would play you though?
I don't know.
In a perfect world.
I don't know, man. They talking to this young cat right now. I believe, you know, Kim Harding, who's one of the biggest casting directors in Hollywood, Reginald Hutlin. They running the show. You know, I believe in letting the experts do what they do. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you who we talking to as the director yet, because they told me that they
okay, we could keep it off the record.
Yeah,
but
we just hired a director. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to you. You know
you know who you are. You know who I would see, but not that he's an incredible actor, but I think it really captures your likeness. Probably on Bokeem Woodbine.
Bokeem Woodbine. Huh. I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he was in Strapped.
He was in Strapped, and
he did a lot of movies. He's also in Dead Presidents. He was the crazy dude in Dead Presidents that was walking around with the dead with the head. Look him up.
We need a young guy though.
I was just thinking of black actors who just need it. You know.
Yeah.
He could be.
Plenty of black actors.
Because we got different times of your life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So he might be.
And there's plenty of black actors out there that need work. You know what I'm saying?
I don't believe
that we do enough black movies.
Facts.
And I don't think that we do enough black stories that will
stand the test of time and then
give us the information of freedom. You know, because information is freedom, and I believe that so many of our people do, like you said, with my book should be on audio, and that's my bad because I just haven't made the time to put it on audio. You know, But I believe so many of us get our information from TV, from records, and you know, that's another reason why with our rap, we have to start putting out truth and facts, because so many of our young people get their information from there. That's their news. You know, they're not going to watch CNN and Fox News. They're going to get theirs from
hip-hop.
From hip-hop.
Jay-Z and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Is Slim the mobster really your nephew?
No. He's like a nephew. I've been knowing...
Yeah, not biologically, but yeah.
Yeah, I've been knowing Slim since he was probably about 14 years old.
Damn.
You know, Chocolate is my man, his okay. uncle. His real uncle is Chocolate. You know, Chocolate did a lot of music for... He did Ice Ice Baby for Vanilla Ice. And,
he rich.
He did a lot of Tupac stuff.
You rich.
You know, me and Slim go way back.
Yeah.
Shout out to Slim, too.
Because he was one of the ones that early on when you was going through things.
When I was in jail.
Yeah, he was flipping. He was like, yo, I'm ready to uncle. I was like, oh,
yeah, he was one of the ones that you know, wrote me letters, you know, that sent me pictures. You know, when I was gone, he stayed down for me. You know, I appreciate him for doing that. And hopefully he'll get his break that he needed. In the music industry, because he's been close, you know what I'm saying? And he's talented. He's wrote a lot of songs for a lot of people that...
we don't know he wrote.
Exactly.
If you had a message to give the 14 to 19-year-old that aspires to be this big-time crack dealer and make it big in selling drugs... What would you tell them?
Well, you know, selling crack is a tough business, man. I mean, you got to be willing to sacrifice a lot. You know, when I look back at my life, when I was sitting in prison and I started to analyze all the things that I was willing to sacrifice to become who I became, the price was enormous. You know, I was willing to sacrifice really my whole family. You know, my younger brother, I gave him a pistol. My mom, her life was in danger, you know, because I was keeping large sums of money at her house. And any time you're keeping large sums of money at somebody's house, if the wrong person found out and if they felt that they had a crack that they could get in, they would take advantage of that. I was just fortunate that none of those things actually happened to me. But, you know, I was in jail where... people went in the house and killed everybody in the house, babies included. And when I look back at my life, I understood that I was putting all of that on the line, not just my freedom, not just my life, but pretty much everybody around me, I was willing to put their life on the line as well. So, you know, when you're selling crack, you got a big door. You open the door wide open for almost anything to take place. So I think that price is really high. I don't think to become a Bill Gates that you have to make those kind of sacrifices. And I would just tell the young brothers that if you can sell crack, you can do anything.
That outside of selling crack. So basically the risk isn't worth
the reward. No question.
And also, let's reiterate, you also gave up 20 years of your life.
Yeah, I mean, if you figure if you took yourself and you worked, just say, even if you only work 18 hours a day, you work 18 hours a day for 20 years and you saved everything that you made in 20 years at minimum wage. And then if you took that pay and compounded, you'd be filthy rich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there is other means of doing things. And hey, Slick Rick told you, man, hey, little kid, don't follow these dopes. Don't follow these rappers and with these fictitious lives, because it's not real. It's all entertainment. You dance to it. You party to it. But don't internalize some of the words like it's going to be you, because it's not possible or probable. This is a man. How much money, what's the most amount of money that you counted in one day?
Probably like $3.2 million.
What does $3.2 million look like? Like, what does it look like?
About half the size of this table off the floor.
Damn, this is a big-ass table. Pan the table if you could. Let them see how big this is.
Yeah, it's about half the size
of this table. All hundos.
No, 100. You know, dope money is mostly 20s.
Okay.
Your next bills would be 50s, then 10s, 5s.
And then punk-ass ones, man.
Hate oh, we don't ones. Even count ones, man.
Oh, you don't count, oh, you don't
no,
count ones?
Man, come on, man. Nobody count the ones, man.
Fuck the ones. So you had a few money machines and all that?
Yeah. I had three money machines and like four girls, and that was their job to count the money and stack it. On a daily basis.
And you wasn't even flashy though, right? You wasn't the type of dude.
Nah, well, you know what? I didn't want to give people edge on me. You know? If they saw you before you saw them, that gave them the ups. So I stayed away from the flash because, I mean, you know, you can see the drug dealer coming down the street. You can see
with
his car.
With the big-ass yellow jacket on. And,
and his car, you know. The car with that bright candy paint job, you know, that he just paid $5,000 or $10,000 for, you know, with the rims and the tires and, you know, everything is saying drug dealer.
I'm a hustler.
Yeah, so, you know, I didn't want that. I didn't want the gold chains. I didn't want the watches, you know.
You didn't make no dumb purchases, though?
I bought some houses that was, you know, some bad buys. Okay. You know,
that's better than buying a chain, though, I would think.
Yeah. At least I made some profit.
Did they take everything from you?
No, not everything, but, you know, they hit me hard.
Okay, yeah, because some of the things that they didn't take, we don't want to talk about it because they don't want them to say. And by the way, we forgot to take this from you 25 years ago.
Yeah. But, you know, the most important thing that I walked away from the game with was my mind. You know, they didn't take my mind. They couldn't get inside my head, which is what I feel that they wanted most of all.
Yes.
You know, they want our mind and our spirit. You know, they want to break us down to a point to where we can't compete, you know, or we feel lost or we feel beat. And I didn't allow them to do that to me.
That's your guy?
Yeah.
Come on then. So, before we go, social media. What's all your social media? How can the people stay in contact with you?
They can get me at Freeway Ricky on Twitter, Instagram, and Freeway Rick Ross on Facebook. Also, I just started the Millionaires Club.
Okay.
And y'all got to check out the Millionaires Club. My goal is I'm going to make 250 millionaires. I just read an article about 2 months ago. I read this article, and it really sicked me to think that the predictors, the economic predictors, are predicting that in 20 years, Black America will be totally broke, and I want to make sure that don't happen.
Mm.
So I've taken it on myself to counteract that. You know, when I went to prison, I was illiterate, but before I left prison, I read over 300 books.
So you went in not being able to read Cat, Jack,
none
Spot.
Of that. None of that.
You just knew how to count.
That's it.
With the money machines and the girls.
Yeah.
I was reading maybe since I was like five, so it always puzzled me. How is somebody illiterate? Like, you just never picked up a book? You didn't go to school?
Well, I didn't see any. What I found out is I didn't really have any interest in reading.
Okay.
You know, when I remember when people were trying to teach me how to read, and they was talking about Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
And, you know, I didn't want to know about Jack and
like
Jill.
Cracking pills. Like,
but if they'd have broken down in terms of this is a way for you to make some money.
Mm-hmm.
This is a way for you to get your family out of poverty. I think I would have understood that better, you know. Because my concern wasn't what Jack and Jill was going up the hill to do. You know, my concern was it going to be some meat and potatoes in the kitchen?
Yeah. When you hustling, when do you say, I might be in over my head? Was there ever a point where you said, okay, I'm too far into this shit now?
Nah. I mean, it gets like, the business is tricky, you know. It's like being an addict almost.
Yeah, I talked to a guy by the name of Calvin Klein who hustled in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I know Calvin.
Yeah, Klein. He was here too. And we were talking about that. We were saying that there's no difference between the crack dealer and the crack user. It's just the choice.
Right.
Because as much as they want to stay up for 4 days smoking it, you want to be up 4 days to be able to sell it to
absolutely.
Them. So you become an addict to sell
and,
it.
And it gradually... You gradually increase, you know, like when I got my first eighth, I was nervous, you know, like, oh man, I got an eighth of cocaine. I got 3 grams of cocaine, which, you know, 3 grams is like the size of a quarter.
Wow.
And I'm like, I got 3 grams of cocaine. Oh my goodness. And then when I got an ounce, I was like, oh my goodness, I got an ounce, but 3 grams ain't nothing. I can do three, and then I got a kilo, and I'm like, oh man, I got a whole kilo of cocaine. And then now I got 100 kilos of cocaine, and 100 keys ain't nothing, you know.
Yeah.
I can deal with 100. So it's like, as you become immune to it, you get more relaxed with it, and it's kind of like my man Napoleon Hill says about crime. If you first around crime, you will kind of shy it. But if you stay around it long enough, you'll start to say, oh, it ain't that bad. And if you stay around it even long enough, you can find yourself tangled up in it.
All right. So 2018, the book is out.
Yes.
The documentary is on Netflix.
Number one documentary on Netflix. Get it twisted.
That's what I'm saying. He gonna let me know.
Emmy nominated.
Okay.
I produced about 75% of that documentary, even though they didn't give me my producer's credit.
Okay.
And I still produced that documentary. I'll be producing a movie.
Okay.
Also working on a TV series.
T-shirts,
podcast. Reality show. I got a new book coming out called Riding with Rick with my man Cody Crutcher. Also, The Millionaires Club, which is what I'm most proud about. I'm going to make 250 millionaires. And it's crazy how our people, man, they don't buy in. You know, so far, I only have 30 people to sign up for The Millionaires Club so far.
Wow.
But that's okay.
Yeah, they'll come.
They'll come.
So right now, if people needed all of this information, where do they go?
They can go to freewaymillionaireclub.com. They can see all the information about The Millionaires Club. They can go on my social media as well and get that Freeway Ricky on Instagram and Twitter, like I said earlier, and Freeway Rick Ross on Facebook. And, you know, the information will be there for them just to find out what it is that they have to do to get started.
Why did you leave the music business?
Well, I really didn't leave the music business. You know, what I do is I don't go with what I like.
Okay.
I go with what's readily available at that time, what's relevant, the low-hanging fruit. You know, like I might be on a big, juicy apple that I see on top of the tree, but they got one that's almost as red and as juicy as that one. Well, I'm going to take that one that's right there next to me.
Gotcha.
And nourish myself and get myself to where now I can climb up to the top of that tree.
Gotcha.
So often we fix our sights on one thing and that's where we'll stay. You know, my man Terry Crews, I had the privilege of talking to him a couple of weeks ago, and he was telling me that he played football so that he could become a movie director.
Wow.
He started acting so that he could become a movie director. So even though he wasn't able to go straight into directing movies, he went around and about to get to where he wants to be.
What he's basically saying is you got to crawl before you walk. And most of y'all come out the womb and think you're going to eat a piece of steak. And you don't even have no teeth. You have to develop into one thing to get to the other shit. You know, before you get seconds, eat the food on your plate.
Real talk.
Yeah. All right, so, yo, I want to thank you for coming through. You leaving out today?
Yeah. I got to leave, man. I've been, as always, man, had a ball in the apple.
Yeah.
You know?
Did you see you was in Queens last night?
Yeah, Queens. Yeah. I went to Queens last night. Been in Manhattan. Well, you know, I try to get around, man.
Yeah, and now he's in Brooklyn.
It's slow to move around here, though, man. It's traffic.
No, it got worse over the years. Yeah,
it's traffic, yeah. Man. It's
crazy
rough
out here. So now he's in Brooklyn with me, Doggy Diamonds. This will be our second interview, which is
and not our last, though.
Yeah, no, definitely won't be our last. We got so much more to talk about.
My movie is gonna kill the charts.
And when the movie is on its way out, I want to holler at you. When the movie come out, I want to holler at you.
Let's do it. Let's do it.
And when it go to DVD, I want to holler at you.
Let's
do
it.
When it go on cable, I want to holler
at you.
Let's
do it, man.
Because there's so much more information that I believe that you possess. And we got to get that to the youth as much as possible, because there's a lot of things that they think is cool that you know
ain't cool. And it's a trick.
It's a trap.
And yeah, don't you think that they ain't setting traps for you. You know, a lot of times we think that a lot of the things that's happening, you know, young people, they think that, oh, this is new. You don't know about this here. But, you know, there's nothing new under the sun.
Nothing new under the sun. So, all right, with that, I'm Doggy Diamonds. This is Freeway, Ricky Ross, the real Rick Ross, Freeway Rick. What's the other names you got? You said Highway Rick? Highway Rick.
Yeah, Texas. Texas.
Shout out to
Texas.
Texas,
they call me Highway Rick.
Highway Rick, the OG right here. Like books out, documentaries out, movie coming.
Clothing line
coming, podcast coming, so much going
motivational
on.
Motivational speaker.
If you want to book him to come talk to the kids, you need to do that too, because the kids need to know the people that they love, this is who they, one of the people that they're emulating. He had beef with the president. He lost though. But he's still here to, but you still here to talk about it though. Some people ain't here to talk about it. They lost with their life. So, you know, thankful that you here and you spreading the message of positivity and not being an old grumpy knucklehead that's like, yo, fuck that. You know what I'm saying?
I'm loving life right now. It's just a dream, you know, to lose your life and get it back and to be allowed to be, you know, here doing what I'm doing today.
Yep, so that's what it is. I'm Doggy Diamonds. We out of here.
Peace.
All right. I got to get the fuck out of here. Thank you for listening to Doggy Diamonds No Filter Podcast. If you like this podcast, make sure you share this. Spread the word. Talk about it. Argue with me. I don't give a fuck what you do. Leave a comment. This is Doggy Diamonds. I'm out of here. See you on the next podcast. Peace. Doggy Diamonds did this.